Welcome to the Ralph Moore Podcast. Gain a leadership advantage as Ralph pulls wisdom from his bag of over 50 years' experience in planting and leading multiplying churches. Our goal is to help you live as a leader you'd want to follow. You'll learn about making disciples and planting churches, but beyond that, you'll gain practical wisdom about subjects like how to manage your team, handling difficult people, pulling a congregation off a growth plateau, and even money management.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. Today, I get to interview a new friend of mine. I was able to share with my new breed partners and did a seminar in his church campus in Orange County, California. His name is Toby Ishitobi, and he's born in Japan. He leads two congregations, really, a Japanese language church and a church of young adults that's in English. And just a real breath of fresh air as we talked and I got to know him a little bit better. I'm very, very excited to have him here. So, Toby, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you, Pastor Ralph. It's a pleasure meeting you and then to be part of this. It's a real honor.
So here's what we want to talk about. I want you to describe the church kind of as it is. We just talked about this just a little bit, because I know that we have a lot of younger pastors. And, you know, as you kind of described how the different characteristics, age-wise particularly, of each congregation, I think in the long run, it's a goal to be a four-generation church. We started out just with young adults. In fact, we really went after single young adults who didn't have kids because we figured then we don't have to run a children's church and it was easier, low overhead. But in the end, you know, I'm now 79 years old. We want to reach people like me as well, but we want to keep reaching the younger too. So I want you to get into that a little bit. And then I want you to tell us the story of the struggle. I mean, this is a church where you grew up and it was good, and then you planted a church, and then you came back, and you know, take us through that, because there's a lot of other people who are going through those same kind of things, and so we you know, give us some blood and guts of it all. Okay. So start out by describing the English and Japanese congregations and how they differ.
Currently, right now, right?
Yeah.
Our church, we have a Japanese language group. And, you know, just the nature of Japanese ministry is that there's not a whole lot of choices out there. In Orange County, there's only a handful, and our church seems to be in a very prime location. So it's easy for the Japanese to congregate in our church to find us. It's next to a very famous Japanese supermarket that's filled with people right now. So the Japanese language is quite a multiple generations represented. We have babies, infants, toddlers, and then a bunch of teenagers who are kind of in between the language. They speak both, but they kind of tend to stick to the Japanese friends. Then we go into the young families, the parents of the kids, and then we have older folks. So the oldest person, I think, is 80, almost close to 90. So that's kind of the wide range of the Japanese language. For the English, after COVID, after all that, we kind of had to do a lot of resetting and restarting. So currently our English language, it's not a big congregation, but it constitutes of a lot of young adults, 20s, 30s, young professionals, newlyweds. Those are kind of the majority. And then there's also, you know, the older folks that has stuck around, but primarily the English language is young adults right now.
That's exciting. I loved your location right next to a freeway.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And tell a little bit about what others would call your church campus. You're doing one of the coolest things that, you know, I always dreamt of doing this and was never able to.
Well, you know, I was a first generation immigrant. When I was 7 years old, my family moved from Japan to the U.S. My father in business, so he kind of moved and just started a new life here. So for us, me and my mother just started going to a local Japanese church, which happens to be the same church that I'm pastoring right now. Used to be called Orange Coast Free Methodist Church, a long name, but you know, that's only choice I had. So I grew up there. And I kind of fell away from the Lord in my teenage years, but kind of never really got away from church. But late teens, the Lord through a girl that I wanted to impress, I really started to kind of devote myself back into the Lord, starting to study the Bible just to impress her at first. But the Lord, the Word of God, like grabbed my heart and just kind of brought me back to a whole new encounter with Jesus when I was, I think, 19 years old. So that kind of changed the course of my life. Started doing youth ministry, loved it. This was all in Japanese language at the time. Even though I spoke both language, my focus was always with my Japanese folks. Fast forward after college, I returned to Japan. That's where I received a call to become a pastor, and I worked there for several years. Struggled a lot in the Japanese nation. I thought I spoke and fit well with the culture, but no, I was wrong. I was pretty American in Japan, so that didn't work well.
That's a funny thing that you say that. My friend Aaron Suzuki and I started the church in the churches in Hawaii. And we always felt like Japan was our secondary mission field. And so we planted a bunch of churches in Japan. And we would go there and I would speak stupid Japanese. If I could talk as well as your average 4-year-old, I'm envious of them. And but I can get around. I can order food.
That's
I
great.
can find my way around the country. I can find my way to the bathroom. And but Aaron, who looks like you, if he would open his mouth, and he's an English speaker, grew up in America, grew up in Maui in California, and they would jump all over him because he didn't say things right, because he looked Japanese. And I had round eyes, so I got away with murder. And he was they caught him. So where did you live when you were in Japan? Where did you?
Started in Tokyo. That's where I started working, but the Tokyo lifestyle was just so brutal, and the trains and the packed like sardines, and I was like, it almost just made me depressed just commuting to work. But thankfully, I was moved to a location that was outskirts of Japan, where there's or Tokyo, that was a little more car culture, so I could drive around and I get to work. And so that's where I was primarily, which is a city called Utsunomiya in Tochigi Prefecture, so about 60 miles north of Tokyo.
Very, very interesting. So, were you involved in church in Japan?
Yeah, my at the time she was my girlfriend or fiance, but my wife is a daughter of a pastor. She grew up in the church in Utsunomiya, and a pretty vibrant church. I never thought that church in Japan or Japanese worship service could be so vibrant. I never experienced it until I went to this church. So, I'm obviously there to impress my future father-in-law, but I was trying to go to church. But it was a spirit-led church, really wonderful. Had like five different services. They had a bilingual ministry, and it's still to this day very much growing. So I had the privilege of experiencing that in Japan, and then I realized, wow, Japanese ministry, if you just follow and get out of the way of the Holy Spirit, it can be such a powerful and vibrant ministry. So that was a great experience for me.
Oh, I'm really excited to hear that. There's so many churches in Japan that kind of look like what the missionaries brought over after World War II. And they kind of just got stuck. They probably were vibrant at one time. I used to travel quite a bit in Japan, and I actually found out that there were 212 little denominations that were built around the life of a missionary. And I knew some of those guys, and a couple of them were kind of off. It's like their calling was out of guilt. They came back, they went over and helped clean up the mess after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and then they came back to America and with a sense of call to Japan. But it was more of a guilt-oriented call, and so their attitude was usually kind of legalistic and almost talking down to people. But I met some really live guys. There were a guy named George Fraser, and he left behind 22 churches. And I found out that of these 212 denominations, average size of about 12 churches. And so one guy makes that many disciples in his adult life and then heads back to the United States to retire or whatever. And a lot of them have just kind of fizzled. There's a group in Nagoya that is led by Japanese, and they, when I was there, they had started 19 churches. Kobe Bible Fellowship in Kobe, and you know my friend Fumi now, who pastors Crossroad. There's a lot of life going on in Japan. It's really exciting, but it's in little hot spots here and there, and I just hope the Lord will blow it into a big flame.
I agree. So I hope I could be a part of that in the future, but right now I have the opportunity to do what's closest to Japan in here in America, and Irvine still houses, thousands of Japanese families. I thought COVID would change all that, but it doesn't feel like it. There's plenty of Japanese people. So it's so true that the harvest is plentiful here in Japan, or I'm sorry, in America to the Japanese. And I feel like we have this really amazing mission field right in front of us across that freeway that you saw. There's a bunch, a ton of Japanese people. So yeah, that's where we're located. So I feel like this is our place right now.
I mean, it came down to even parking. I was envying your parking lot because you're in a industrial complex and you pretty much own it on Sundays, huh?
Oh, for sure. So we do like cultural events where we feature like Japanese like culture, and we have this festival, and we put out the it's called Nagashi Somen, which is the bamboo, and there's the noodle running around running, and then people would try to pick it up with a stick, the chopstick, and we have this beautiful parking lot where we could just clear all the cars and have the space outside. So that's a fun thing we get to do.
That's great. So tell me about your kind of your journey as you became a come back and became a pastor. You kind of you said and when we talked before, you said you were kind of the golden child of the church growing up, and then you left and planted, and then you came back. Take us through the saga, and tell us about the pain that was along the way.
It is it still is a pretty real in my heart. But I grew up there, I was saved there, I fell away but came back to the Lord, and people were just just thank, because they were the people who prayed for me. My mom begged everyone from the church, English, Japanese, to pray for this rebellious teenager, and I came back and people rejoiced, and I was so touched by this church and their hospitality and their not giving up on me and loving on me. So this was a church that was so dear to me, both English and Japanese congregation back then. So and then I was sent out to Japan. They prayed, and and then later on I came back to the United States with a calling from God to become a pastor, but I had to study on the East Coast for a little bit because my wife was going to master's there for music. So I went to East Coast, so I kind of was away from the home church, but they continued to send me letters and offerings and just to support my education and my ordination process. And then I finally came back, but you can't just, because we were a Free Methodist church, we're being appointed. So I was hoping to be appointed to the Orange Coast Church, but that wasn't there. It was occupied. So I went into another church and began to do assistant pastoring. And all this time, this Orange Coast family was just always behind me and supporting me financially and prayerfully. And then, but 2014 came, and I just had this calling to return, because I was pastoring in LA, but my hometown of Huntington Beach, even though I wasn't born there, I grew up all my life there. I went to the same school as Peyton Jones Elementary School and middle school and high school. I kind of followed his footsteps. I didn't even know that back then, but I really felt the calling to plant in Huntington Beach as an Asian Japanese American. But I felt like There's a need there, and so we planned it. I didn't know much. I wish I knew the new breed stuff back then, but I didn't know any of these things. I should have read your book. I actually did read it, but it was I kind of jumped in. But that was, think at that age, I think it was good that I kind of jumped in, because had I been 10 years older, I probably would have been too scared to do that. But anyways, I jumped in with my wife and my young family, and we planted in Huntington Beach. It was an English speaking, but also we had some Japanese translation service, but it was primarily an English multicultural church. It was still small, but we struggled, but it was a good bunch of people that we got to minister to. We started gaining a little bit by little bit. And then 4 years later, the opportunity came where the church that I grew up, their pastor retired. I think there was just a lot of turmoil in him retiring. There was just the comp, we were appointed, so the reappointment wasn't there. So the opening was there, and the church plant, we decided that, like, all right, if there's a need for a pastor, and at that time the church plant, we're about to move with the school because they're doing a renovation. So we're going to, from Huntington Beach, we had to move to Fountain Valley. And then just around the same time, the Costa Mesa Church, the English pastor, there was a vacancy. So we prayed as a church. I prayed with my wife, and because I love the church plant, it was small but family, and it was exactly what I was hoping for. And there was some future promise, but we felt like if the church needs a pastor, and if I could go back to the church, and we didn't, we were church planting, so we had to set up, tear down every Sunday. We're tired, but we loved it. So, but the having a building of our own, that didn't really attract us, but we decided to just, all right, let's merge. Because here I am, the golden child of this Orange Coast church that that they raised me, they prayed for me, they supported me, they even like supported the church plant for entirety of our time. So I thought, okay, I know there's a little turmoil because of the conference or the appointment, and but I thought, I could might charm my way through this, and to really like merge the two churches, and to like and our church name was Rise Church. So like, let's rise up and together and above all the I don't know, just whatever it is, the challenges, we could rise up. So we decided to go there with such high hopes that, this, maybe someone else can't do that, but who else? This is the church, the two churches that I dearly love. So I thought it's gonna work out. But what I underestimated was culture, two different church culture, and it was extremely hard. And it's nobody's fault, really. But the way we worshiped, the way we made decisions, the way we it was just so different. And I remember the first day we worshiped together. I was standing in back of the room, and at that time there's still a lot of people, because all the people from the church plant, all the people from the my home church, they're all kind of, okay, that's what's gonna happen. They all kind of didn't know. So everybody showed up to church. The room was packed, but I was sitting back of the room, and I just felt like there's complete divide, and spiritually, and the temperature, and they're like, who are you, and how come you don't accept? I mean, it was just hard to explain, but I'm looking at it, and it was just devastating, because you see this divide that I don't know how this would ever really merge. And slowly but surely, like, people start leaving one after the other, because both people from both churches said, this isn't what we're looking for. So the church plant people, they were excited, but it felt like it was just hard to adjust. And again, it's hard, it's nobody to blame, because it was just a two different culture that I thought, I was the bridge, but that was a little arrogant of me. And it was just it was painful because the hopes were shattered pretty quickly. I don't know the exact numbers, but my estimate was that 80% of all the people from the church plant and the existing church just kind of faded away. So we're left with just this very kind of hurt, but still trying to see what God still has for us. So hesitant, but kind of curious people who remained.
Let me interrupt with a question, though, because I think you were the bridge. I mean, ultimately, for those who stayed, you were the bridge. And I think it's easy for us, and we sort of, in our humility, sort of slide into institutionalism. We're going to find some other bridge, but God always uses a man. Barnabas was the bridge between who became the Apostle Paul and the apostles in Jerusalem who were afraid of him. And so oftentimes in these kind of negative situations, it takes a person who's got enough perseverance and love. And if you have those two ingredients, you can pretty well weather the storm, and you have. It's obvious. And so don't for one thing I want to say is don't sell yourself short. And if you're listening to this and you're in a tight spot like Toby was, maybe to some degree still is, because it's going great, but it's not, it could, there could be 3,000 people and there's not. But if you're sitting there and you're going, well, I'm not the bridge, and you're going to try to do it institutionally, and that's not going to work. It really comes down to being the man in the middle and loving people and staying there. I've gone through a lot, enough hard times in my life where it you just gutball it, and you hang in there and trust the Lord.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe and check his blog at ralphmoore.net.